Hare Krishna. So is anybody here for the first time? Oh, good. First-timers today. I hope you have a wonderful time and that you'll come back every Sunday like everybody else. So, today's the last time I'm going to be here to give a Sunday feast lecture. So I want to be, in case I forget, I want to say beforehand, it's been a wonderful time to spend with you. I've spent almost, a little over 2 months here now. And it's been a wonderful experience. So many nice friendships made, and devotees here are very kind. It's a great facility, so I wish you all success in continuing your own Krishna consciousness and to make the whole country Krishna conscious. So we're going to speak about that today. So, in the Krishna book, do you know anything about Krishna consciousness at all? Yeah. No. Okay. All right. It won't be exactly an introductory lecture, but I'll try not to leave you out. Okay? Thank you. So there's one of our scriptures is called the Srimad Bhagavatam. And you can turn this down, Prabhu, a little bit so it's not so echoey. Srimad Bhagavatam is actually the book, the title translates to the beautiful story of God, or we can be called the science of God. And there's many stories in there about the activities, pastimes of the Supreme Lord, culminating, let's say there's 12 cantos altogether, 12 parts, culminating in the 10th part, which is the story of Krishna, God, who was here on this planet approximately 5,000 years ago. And Prabhupada, in the very early days, Prabhupada wrote a synopsis of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. And it's called the Krishna book. And the Krishna book is subtitled Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. So it's all about the Lord and his activities that he performed while he was here on the planet. So I'm going to read from the very first page of that so that we can get a clue as to what was going on 5,000 years ago before Krishna appeared. And then we're going to compare it to today. So the Krishna book begins. Once the world was overburdened by... Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have Krishna book? Or are you going to do this simultaneous? Is there a Krishna book here? I'm sorry, I should have prepared you. No. Need Krishna book, not Bhagavatam. Okay, let's just do it the normal way. Oh, there we go. Okay, thank you. Okay, so just the very first paragraph. Okay. Once the world was overburdened by unnecessary defense force of different kings who were actually demons but were posing themselves as the royal order. At that time, the whole world became perturbed and the predominating deity of the earth, known as Bhumi, went to see Lord Brahma, the secondary creator, to tell her of the calamities due to the demonic kings. Bhumi assumed the shape of a cow and presented herself before Lord Brahma with tears in her eyes. She was bereaved and was weeping just to invoke the Lord's compassion. She repeated the calamitous position of the earth, and after hearing this, Lord Brahma became very much aggrieved, and he wanted to help her. He at once started for the ocean of milk to petition Lord Vishnu for help. Lord Brahma was accompanied by all the various demigods headed by Lord Shiva, and Bhumi also followed. Arriving on the shore of the milk ocean, Lord Brahma began to worship Lord Vishnu, who had formerly saved the earth planet by assuming the form of a transcendental boar. So, Vishnu is the maintainer of the universe. There's three primary deities that you may have heard. Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva. So Lord Brahma, he is the creator, the secondary creator of the universe. Lord Shiva, he is the destroyer. And Lord Vishnu, he is the maintainer, because it's easy to start something, it's easy to destroy something, but it's really difficult to maintain it. So Vishnu takes the tough job. So they, there was too many kings. They were creating a great disturbance. And so the earth personified, she went to complain. I need help. There's too many of these demons who are making a mess of things. I need help. So she went to petition Lord Brahma. What do we do? Help me. And Lord Brahma, he thought, well, this is a big problem. I'm going to take it right to the boss. So he went to Lord Vishnu. And he sat in meditation to petition the Lord for help. And the Lord replied also by meditation from the transcendental telephone within the heart, that I'll come soon personally to take care of the problem. So this was wonderful news that now the Lord, he has many different options available to him there. He has different empowered representatives. He has different avatars, the Shakti Vaishavatars, and so on like that. And he can take care of problems through any of these means. But the Lord had decided at this point that he was going to come personally to deal with the situation, to the delight of the Lord's devotees. Because the Lord, he comes to this planet for two purposes. Puritranaya saranam vinashaya chaduskritam dharmam dharma samstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. He comes to annihilate the miscreants, the demons, and he also comes to give pleasure to his devotees. So this is what happened at that time. The Lord came to give pleasure to the devotees and also to take care of business. So in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, it's explained how the Lord, he killed many demons personally, even from the time he was just a child. Of course, we must understand the nature of this world. The nature of this world is that there's two different classes of beings, and this is described in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is the elementary text of all spiritual knowledge. And in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 16th chapter, it's described that there's two different classes of beings, the divine and the demonic. Or those who are godly, who are willing to follow the instructions or order of the Lord, and those who are demonic, who are opposed to the Lord, and who simply want to serve their own senses. So I'm going to read now a little bit from the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, to give an idea of what these demonic persons are actually like. So, this is, I'm not sure what text, about text 10, maybe 12. Those who are demonic do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness nor truth nor proper behavior is found in them. They say that this world is unreal, that there is no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. Following such conclusions, the demonic, who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence, engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Taking shelter of insatiable lust, absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demonic, thus illusioned, are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. So, there was a lot of these types of people at that time, and as the Bhagavatam explains, the Krishna, he killed personally many of them. Now many people, they think, well, this is terrible, that, you know, religion means peace and love, and so on like that, but your God is a killer? He comes here to kill? Not only that, he's so immoral, he has 16,108 wives. What kind of God do you have? So we have to understand the transcendental position of the Supreme Lord, huh? He is above all the rules and regulations. And moreover, everything that he does is good and wonderful. And we have to study his activities and behavior to try to understand how that is so. When the Lord kills, it's understood that nobody actually dies. For the soul, there is never birth nor death, nor having once been, does he ever cease to be. So all of us are eternal spiritual beings. We never are born, never die. And when the Lord comes and kills, actually what he does is give liberation, spiritual liberation, to those souls who he comes in contact with in that way. So this is a great benediction. So many people are suffering in this world. They want to free themselves from suffering. And of course, the way to do that is to achieve liberation from the material realm. So the Lord, when he kills, is actually giving liberation. So many demons were taken care of in that way. And then, of course, the bulk of them were killed during the Battle of Kurukshetra. Bhagavad Gita was spoken just prior to the Battle of Kurukshetra, and in that war, I guess we should call it World War I, actually, because it's greater war than all the other wars. Depending on which version of the Mahabharata you read, somewhere between 600 million and 1 billion, or 600 million and 1 billion men lost their lives in that battle. So it's a big, big war. And that took care of most of the people, most of the demonic elements in the world. But that was 5,000 years ago. And since that time, they've reconstituted their numbers. So now we've got a similar situation to what we had before, where the earth is overpowered by unnecessary kings posing as the royal order. Demonic kings, rather. So just to give you a hint of how this is going on, I'm going to read part of the introduction from a book called The Globalization of Poverty and the New World Order. This book is written by Professor Michelle Chostodowski at the University of Ottawa in Canada. And he's an economist, and he traveled around to many different countries, and he saw what was going on in the modern era in the name of economics. So you just compare this to the problems Bhumi had. So it states, humanity is undergoing, in the post-Cold War era, an economic and social crisis of unprecedented scale, leading to the rapid impoverishment of large sections of society. National economies are collapsing and unemployment is rampant. Local level famines have erupted in sub-Saharan Africa, South Asia, and parts of Latin America. This globalization of poverty, which has largely reversed the achievements of the post-war decolonization, was initiated in the Third World, coinciding with the debt crisis of the early 1980s. How are you doing with that? It's not easy to... Okay, I'll slow down. The New World Order feeds on human poverty and the destruction of the natural environment. It generates social apartheid, encourages racism and ethnic strife. It undermines the rights of women and often precipitates countries and often leads countries into destructive wars. Since the 1990s, it has extended its grip to all major regions of the world, including North America, Western Europe, the countries of the former Soviet bloc, and the, quote, newly industrialized countries of Southeast Asia and the Far East. This worldwide crisis is more devastating than the Great Depression of 1930s. It has far-reaching geopolitical implications, economic dislocation, say economic problems, have also been accompanied by the outbreak of regional wars, destroying national societies, and in some cases, destruction of entire countries. By far, this is the most serious economic crisis in modern history, and it's all being done deliberately. So this is our situation today. The powers that be, the people who control the wealth of the world, instead of using their wealth to make things better, they are using it to actually make things worse. Why? Because they're demonic. It's very simple. And from this we can actually, if you want to know what demonic actually is, just study modern economics and you'll be shocked. In fact, there's one very good book for that called The Shock Doctrine, which I think was written in 2006, written by a woman named Naomi Klein, a Canadian. And that book was very, very difficult for me to read. I researched it for writing my book, Spiritual Economics. And it was very, very difficult to realize how, there's no other word besides demonic, these people are. How they'll make people suffer deliberately, extreme suffering, and impoverish people deliberately for their own aggrandizement, to get more money yet than they actually need. So our situation is not unlike what it was before. Now there's, I'm going to read one quote to you from one fellow who was the chief economist for the International Monetary Fund. Professor Chostorovsky, I was just reading this statement, is what he was writing about was an International Monetary Fund. Now I'm going to read to you from a resignation letter of Davison Budhu, who was the former managing director. I'm sorry, he was the former chief economist for the International Monetary Fund. Today I resigned from the staff of the International Monetary Fund after over 12 years and 1,000 days of official fund work in the field. Hawking your medicine. You know hawking? Selling. Pushing. Pushing your medicine and your bag of tricks on governments and peoples in Latin America, the Caribbean, and Africa. To me, resignation is a priceless liberation, for with it, I have taken the first big step to that place where I may hope to wash my hands of what in my mind's eye is the blood of millions of poor and starving people. Mr. Kamdesus, the managing director of the fund. The blood is so much, you know, it runs in rivers. It dries up too. It cakes all over me. And sometimes I feel that there is not enough soap in the whole world to cleanse me from the things that I did do in your name, in the name of your predecessors, and under your official seal. Pretty grim, huh? There's a lot of stuff like this. And why? Because they're demonic. This is what is going on in the world today. Now, all of us were fortunate enough to be, let's say, not to have to deal with this kind of thing on a daily basis, either in perpetrating it or being a victim of it. But what about them? What about those people who do suffer from this? And by the way, this is coming to a neighborhood near you. As he mentioned, the economic crisis is, as Chostorovsky mentioned, the economic crisis is going on in Western Europe, in North America also. And it's not happening by chance. Whatever economic problems we have are being deliberately created. So, how are we going to deal with the problem? Well, I'm recommending that we do the same thing that Bhumi did. That we have to appeal to Vishnu for help! Seriously. Because Who else do you turn to? In the eighth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a story of the fight, the battle between the demigods and the demons, or the devas and the demons. The devas, you know the devas? So there's controllers of the universal affairs, the sun god, moon god, wind god, like this. So they live in heaven, but periodically the demons are able to mount an attack on heaven. So they're having battles now and again. So the eighth canto of the Bhagavatam explains how one time they were having a battle, and the demigods, it didn't look very good for their side. So they were scratching their heads, oh, what to do? And they said, well, now is the time to appeal to the mode of goodness. There's different qualities of material energy. When the dark energy becomes prominent, the strength of the wicked becomes very strong. And so sometimes this situation favors the demonic, and other times the light comes and it favors the devas. So the devas, being in a tough spot, they were saying, well, let's try to bring in the mode of goodness, because by the mode of goodness, then the demons, they'll lose their energy. So that's what they did. And they went and they appealed to Vishnu for help. And Vishnu said, yeah, of course, I'll come. So he came on the back of his carrier Garuda and took care of business there also. So there's many stories like this throughout the Bhagavatam, the battle between the devas and the demons. And what we have going on in the world right now is the modern chapter of the same story. It's a perennial story. It goes on eternally. Sometimes the demons are winning, sometimes the devas are winning. So it's going on now. Now who's going to win? There's the question. So that depends upon what we do, right? The problem that we have is that there's a war going on and the good guys aren't participating, right? The demons, they're working hard every day trying to destroy this world, engaging in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. And what are the good guys doing? We're having fun, enjoying sense gratification. Let's go for a picnic today, nice sunny day. Huh? We're not in the fight. This is the problem. Huh? So what happens is the problems get worse little by little. Huh? So that you don't notice what's going on. This is called boiling the frog. If you don't know the story. So a frog, you know, he's kind of stupid, but not totally stupid. If you take him and put him in a pot of boiling water, he'll go, yikes! He'll jump out. But if you put him in a pot of cool water and very gradually raise the temperature, he's not smart enough to get out before he cooks. Huh? And just sit in there. So this is what's going on in the world today. We've got problems. Yes. Okay. All right. We'll fix it in time. Just be patient. Okay. Little by little by little, it gets better. We'll make it better. We're working on it. Okay? Just next week. Be patient. Like this. Well, guess what? There's not going to be a solution to this economic problem. It's going to get worse and worse. But little by little. So that we're going to become a cooked frog before too long. Or as they say, our goose will be cooked, huh? Unless we recognize what's going on, huh? If we're aware of what's going on, then what do? Help! We call for Krishna. We call for Vishnu. Help! Huh? Why? What happens? Because there's too much darkness in the world, huh? Too much evil. Evil, darkness, it's the same thing, right? Where does darkness come from? Comes from the absence of light. Right? Darkness by itself, you can't bring in darkness and cover up the light. Huh? No. Darkness is dependent on light. And if there's not enough light, then there's darkness. It's very simple. So where does light come from? Light comes from God. Light, God, or God, goodness, light, they're all the same thing, right? Evil, darkness, they're the same thing. So if we want to diminish the amount of evil or darkness, we have to increase the amount of goodness or light or God. Huh? Very simple. The question is, who's going to do it? Any hands going up? Come on. Huh? And how are we going to do it? Huh? By calling on Vishnu. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we're starting the spiritual revolution. This is the spiritual revolution. And it has two parts. It has the spiritual evolution part, right? So revolution, you know, is R-E, revolution. So we break it up into the revolution and the evolution. Now, we have the situation in the world where spiritual knowledge is available to everyone through Prabhupada's books in so many languages everywhere. So everyone can evolve spiritually and understand they're not the body and how this world is working, and how to save the world by calling on Vishnu. And then the second part is the spiritual revolution, where we participate in the revolution by Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. God and His name are none different. Huh? So by calling on the name of God, by calling Hare Krishna, Krishna is present personally in His name. And so the revolution, the goal of the revolution is to get 2% of the population to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra at least once a day. That's all. You can do more if you want, but just once a day, for peace, to bring more God, more goodness, more light into the world. So what's the population here of Slovenia? 2 million. So 2%, what's that? 40,000 only. So that's our goal. We have to get 40,000 people to understand if we want to change the world, we have to bring more God, more goodness, more light into the world, and do that by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. So there's one devotee in Florida. His name is David Wolf. For his PhD in sociology, he did a study to show that by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, the people would raise up their consciousness. He created a statistical a numerical analysis of the gunas. And so he gave some people, he had volunteers, he gave them the test to find out basically lifestyle questions. What time do you go to sleep? You know, what are your habits? What food do you eat? What's your entertainment? And so on like this. And so then he had three groups. He had one control group not chanting any mantra. Another group chanting a meaningless mantra like things go better with Coca-Cola. And the third group chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And so he had them do this chanting for several months, morning and evening, I think, for about 10 minutes. And after the end of that time, he was able to show statistically that the people were much more sattvic than they were prior to the chanting. Which means that by chanting, there's more goodness, more God, more light, by that practice. And of course, so many of the devotees here, we've all experienced the same thing, that by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, it raises our own consciousness, that we feel more and more wonderful, more close to God. So this is our goal. That we say that the problem in the world is not enough God. It's not that there's too much evil. No, there's not enough God. And people who are abandoning God, well, okay, give them maybe they're, I hate to use the word justified in a way. Maybe they're a little, they have some reason for that, because after all, I was raised Catholic also, and I abandoned that when I was a young man because it didn't make any sense to me. But Krishna consciousness makes a lot more sense, and it explains the science of God in a very wonderful way. So we can give the spiritual evolution by which people can understand the spiritual science. They can understand how they're not the body, how they're related to God, who God is, and so on. And then also encourage everyone to take up the spiritual evolution by calling on God, by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra at least once a day. That's all. You don't have to shave your head. Don't have to put paint on your face. Don't have to wear the funny clothes. None of those things. Just call on God for help. Bring more God, more goodness, more light into the world to push away the darkness. So this is our spiritual revolution. We're beginning. We're working on it. We've got the spiritual-r-evolution.global website coming up. We need to make mantra cards in every language. So we're looking for help. Anybody want to volunteer, please see me. Join the team. And the wonderful thing about the spiritual revolution is there's no losers. Everybody wins. And, usually the symbol for the revolution is the clenched fist, right? Viva la revolution! Something like that. Well, our symbol is like this. This is the symbol for the spiritual revolution. Haribo! Haribo! So, and everybody becomes happy. And Prabhupada wanted this too. Prabhupada, he had compassion, so much compassion. He says, all the Rakshasas, all the demonic people, we have to save them too. And it's possible. You know, they're most unfortunate victims of themselves. They're creating such a dark future for themselves. So they can become happy too. Because the rising tide lifts all boats. And if the whole world is chanting Hare Krishna, they'll also become happy and surrender to Krishna. So, thank you for chanting every day. You join the revolution yourself, chant every day, encourage all your friends to chant. Help us in any way that you can to spread the revolution. 2%, right? So we're going to make a website so every country they can have their record keeping and sign people up. Okay, we'll leave it at that. We have 2 minutes for questions. You had a point. Yeah.
How can we be in some things more rot and in some things less rot? Is there more rot in the statues in there than it is in the trees outside?
More what?
More God.
More God. I'm using that in a kind of like an example. Okay? I'm saying, okay, we have the idea of more light, right? So the point is, how does God come into this world? So 5,000 years ago, God came personally to deal with the situation. But now how does he come? In this particular age of Kali, he comes in the form of his holy name.
Okay, what is liberation?
We don't have time for that question. That's not exactly the point is like this, and I'll explain it more to you in person in more detail afterwards, but the point is like this, that God in Kali Yuga, in this age, he manifests in the form of his holy name. And so it's required that somebody chant that name for God to come manifest. If we chant, God will be present. That's what I mean, there will be more God. Now,
with this acknowledgement to the divineness in your surroundings, which is...
No, not the divineness in the surroundings. We're talking about the divineness in God. God is also a separate person. It's not that he's divided himself into all of his creation. The creation rests on his energy, but he is still an individual, separate living being like you and I. But he's the supreme fountainhead of everything. We'll talk about it more later, okay? Right now we have to stop for the kirtan. Thank you for coming. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Viva la revolution. You want to join the revolution?
I
want to
join the revolution.
Jai.
Huh? What?